From listener-supported KTOO, welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan, or on demand as a podcast. It's Friday, November 17th, and I'm your host, Andy Klein. Thanks for joining the conversation. Coming up, we got a big show here today, folks. And folks from Theater in the Rough are going to be here to talk about their production of Cabaret. And it's Public Market Week coming up. Organizer Pete Metcalf and friends are here to tell us about all about it. Diabetes Awareness Month is being spearheaded in Juneau by Bartlett Hospital. There's lots to learn there. And Alaska Positive and the Alaska State Museum continues to showcase photography as an art form. And we'll talk to a juror of that show, internationally acclaimed climate photographer Camille Seaman. And then finally, the swim and dive teams will be here to talk about their Christmas tree and wreath sale, which all starts next Friday. That and so much more ahead today. Hope you'll join me. Weather ahead for this week. Showers with the chance of snow showers in the forecast through Thanksgiving. There's some snow accumulation possible tomorrow and Sunday. Other than that, there's going to be a little bit of rain, a little bit of showers. You know the drill. That's all going to be happening coming up this week. We'll be right back with you with more for Juno Afternoon.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years. With cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juneau. More at heritagecoffee.com.
Hanson Grass. Ka eat with the shu yi, we kashuk a yi tin. Jin kat ka ke jin tau kanakaya haani kak. Gunish cheese.
And welcome back to the KTOO studios, Juneau Afternoon, from your community-supported public media station. I'm Andy Klein, your host for today. So good to have you here with us, and so good to be joined by Fubao Hartle and Peter Metcalf. Thanks to both of you guys for coming in. And it is Public Market
Week. Sure is.
Peter, you don't look exhausted yet.
Well, a week from today, right about this time, we'll be in the thick of it. And riddle me this, Batman. Yes. Why do I... Every first of every month, think of this guy sitting next to me, Fubao.
I don't know why. First of every month,
because
you're turning the page.
Yes.
On a calendar.
That's
is that
right.
Why?
And you know, today we have two Fubao's calendars in our house, and I realized I hadn't turned one page. But then sometimes the photographs are so beautiful, you just want to keep them up.
Yeah, that's right. You kind of take a sneak peek. Sometimes too, yeah. Like sneak peeks,
oh, yeah.
What's ahead, the month ahead. Fubao, tell me a little bit about your calendar this year. What was sort of your inspiration for doing the calendar this year?
Yeah, because I really like my calendar. It's easier for me to take picture of my disability, and the reason why I like about the public market is so much fun. So much fun to have so many people there. Come as a community, come together over Thanksgiving weekend and have fun. Please come on down.
And, you know, you get so much great feedback, I'm sure, as a person. You've got a product. You've got your calendar. You work on it through the year. You put it together. And then I think it's so fun for artists to be able to have that personal interaction with people that come down and get to look at your calendar and give you feedback and maybe give you ideas about what to do next year.
Yeah. Really cool.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Well, I think what you just said really is what the public market is all about, and especially in these recent decades where we've become sort of separated from the products we're buying. You know, I do a lot of online shopping,
sure.
But this is an opportunity to meet people like Fubao and talk to them about their photography or their, you know, the woolen goods they're making or the, you know, we have this one new vendor coming down from Anchorage who manufactures casual, well, it's wear for the working woman, and it's casual wear also, and I'm anxious to meet her. She's designed a really functional product, and she's a hardworking nurse. So that's just one example of the many, many products.
So much of it, although you have a lot of vendors from down south too, and from across the U.S., but so much of it really has a great Alaska focus. You know, it's so much of it's so usable and understands Alaska lifestyle and things that people want.
Speaking
here
of that, we got Todd and Annie Fritzy from Dillingham, who live a very traditional lifestyle. I follow them on Facebook, and Todd traps the furs that Annie makes into clothing, and she's you pick and his, you know, stitches that come from way back when.
Yeah, traditional methods of, yes. of creating these furs. Wow, really
so
cool.
So it's fun to meet people like that. Yeah. And it's, for me, it's a huge social occasion. I see people for the that I haven't seen since the last public market.
Well, we'll maybe talk about some of those, but let's talk first. Just highlight for me some of the new vendors that you're really interested in seeing that people haven't ever seen before at the public market.
Well, you know, I just mentioned the Swoop, and then a couple who are, you know, Jen Lefsborough was here last year, but that was her first time, and she's Arctic Fit, and they manufacture in Anchorage outdoor wear primarily for women, but, you know, their headbands and merino wool and technical fabrics. And I visited them just a few weeks ago and did a little video, and it's now on our social media. But
they're getting a lot of national attention as well, I think, the Arctic Fit, right?
Is that right?
Yeah, that's my understanding, is that they've really gotten a niche.
I would hope so.
Yeah, they deserve high quality gear.
It's
yeah.
really good stuff.
Right.
And then another one of my favorites is Arctic Pups and Dog Gear by Susan Dunsmore. She's just coming back from South Africa, so it'd be fun to kick it around with Susan. But she's designed and created a handle for dogs that is specifically for you're walking along a trail and you see some people coming, you grab the dog. And I wish that had been around here, because I was out on on the airport dike, and a couple dogs came racing up to us and tumbled past us, and there were several of us, and we were all like, what about our knees?
Yeah. I have friends that even recently have had bad knee happen.
Good business for the orthopedics.
But. Yeah, that's true. Well, that's great. It's great to recognize a issue like that and have a product for it. It's
that's
great.
Right.
You know, it reminds me. So, one thing I want to talk about is that this year at the public market is kind of a special year, because it's back to its old stomping grounds. But
right.
its old stomping grounds are vastly improved, which is the Centennial
right.
Hall, right?
It's as new as it was when we first walked in there 40 years ago.
Right.
It's kind of absurd for me to be saying that. But
that's amazing. Is this the 40th anniversary?
It is the 40th.
This
yes.
is it.
Yeah.
40th anniversary of the public market.
We started in 1983.
Wow.
In a brand new Centennial Hall. And now we have a brand new Sheffield Ballroom. And I checked it out the other day. And from our standpoint, the really cool thing is the floor. It's soft.
Yeah, right.
Which is nice.
Yeah, it's not that wood anymore. It's got a whole new kind of feel to it. That's right. And then also in the Jack. So the way that it's set up is that the majority of the vendors are in Centennial Hall, because it's bigger, and it's a $10 fee to get in there.
That's right.
But then the Jack is free to get in, and there's about 40 vendors in there. Is that right?
That's right.
Yeah.
And then also, we're not doing it at the Elizabeth Paradovich Hall this year. We did it for a couple of years, but Central Council is doing that, and they're calling it the Indigenous Holiday Market. And they're full. And they're also offering door prizes of Alaska Airlines tickets. So go down to Elizabeth Paradovich Hall after you've been, you know, gone through the public market. And then we're doing a whole mess of door prizes. And the vendors are generously donating, you know, gift certificates of $150 or more. We have $500 in cash prizes. The Juno Arts and Humanities Council is concluding their raffle at the public market. We'll be drawing that. And you have coming weekend is last opportunity to get raffle tickets for their travel raffle. And they have a bunch of really cool destinations that you can win if you get one of those tickets.
Yeah, I saw Round Trip. Alaska Airlines, anywhere they fly.
My favorite one is Tinicky. I want to go to Tinicky. That's my favorite place.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that sounds great. Well, tell me a little bit more about some of the other things that happen when you go into the public market. Of course, there's the vendors and there's the artisans and the people that have goods, but there's also a lot more going on, right?
Yeah, we also have a food court and espresso bar, but we'll be having the Vox Borealis, which is a choral group singing holiday songs, and Juno Cello Choir, which is all cellos, about a dozen, and they perform, I believe they're going to be about 2 o'clock on Friday afternoon for an hour or so, holiday music. Just really fun. And then on Sunday, one of Fubao's favorite days, Family Day, we're going to have several elves running around throughout the doing Elf on the Shelf. So if your children find an elf on the shelf, you'll get a door prize.
Oh, very good.
A prize, a children's prize.
The sneaky elves on the shelves, yeah, spying on us at all times. So that's great. So the whole thing, let's just talk about the hours and that right. kind of stuff, too. The whole thing starts day after Thanksgiving, right, on Friday?
That's right, on Friday. We open it to the public at noon and continue till 7 p.m. And then on Saturday and Sunday, we open at 10 a.m. and close at 5 p.m. And as you mentioned earlier, there's an admission charge to Centennial Hall. The Jack is free to enter, as is the Indigenous Holiday Market. That's free to enter as well. So we'll have something like well over 200 vendors in the Auk District neighborhood. And it's well worth it for everybody to come. And we don't want them to miss Fubao, who's going to be in the brand new Sheffield Ballroom.
And Fubao, you showed me one calendar. Now, you have two calendars that you've done, or just the one?
One calendar.
So, it's just kind of like beautiful scenics of lots of different places. I see some stuff from Sitka, but also from Juneau as well.
Last year was a big year for Peter. This last year was the 40th, and this year is going to be a 44th year.
Technically, he's right. It'd be the 41st, but it's been 40 years.
I see.
It's a little easier to say 40, but he's right.
That's true.
And I want to mention one of the things I most appreciate about Fubao's art is his gift cards, because I use those throughout the year, greeting cards, really. And they're beautiful and well-produced.
And it really goes along with your motto, only at the public market, yeah, right? This is where you can get Fubao stuff, is only at the public market. Yeah. A lot of your vendors, like yourself, Fubao, a lot of the vendors, they build up through the year targeting this event.
They need a lot of inventory. But in some cases, you know, like Fubao and Mark Kelly is his competitor. And they, it's where you're going to meet them and get their signature on the calendar and talk to them about their photography. So, you know, that's the big thing about the public market, you know, socializing and meeting the artists who are creating the products.
It's so true. You know, even if you're buying for holidays, for gifts, to have met the artist and then be able to tell about that artist who made, even if it's, you know, I've given, like, for instance, bowls that were made in Haines, yeah, right? And having met the artist, you know, my parents have a bowl that I got at a public market that was made by an artist in Haines, and they tell that to everyone who eats salad out of that bowl. You know, it's a big deal for them.
And that reminds me of Betty Bill. She'll be back, and she's our eldest vendor. She's, I think, 83 now, but she does pottery. And a lot of, you know, pottery, it breaks, and, you know, you need to replace a Betty Bill bowl or plate. This is, you know, come down to the public market. She's in the Egan room where she has been for, I think, 36 years or something. And Mark Kelly has been there this is his 35th
How many year. Vendors did you start with the first year? Do you remember?
You know, we filled out the Sheffield Ballroom. We just did it in the ballroom the first year, and there was about 89, what we had.
So it was pretty big from the start.
It was, really. Yeah. And then we expanded to the whole facility.
Was it a hit right away?
It was. It was kind of mind-blowing. We couldn't open the doors to the Sheffield Ballroom because the lobby was jam-packed with people. So, I guess we got something going here.
This seems like a good idea. Yeah. And it survived the pandemic. Might have been the hardest years in a way.
Well, it was most anxiety-provoking, but it was proof of concept. I mean, the public still came out and supported us, and we were really moved by the community response. And you know, so I realized, if nothing else, I realized, man, we just have to keep making this bigger and better. Not necessarily bigger, but better. And we really have worked on that this year.
Well, in some ways, as you're saying, like the Klingon and Haida taking on another aspect of it. It makes it bigger. You've yeah. provided the proof of concept that this is something that people right. want. And now people are expecting it, and there's room for lots yeah. of different places to have this kind of a
thing. In fact, we were kind of hoping the Friends of the Museum would be able to do their thing at the museum, but they weren't. But I'm pretty sure next year, because one of the consequences of the pandemic was we had probably about 30% loss of vendor participation, half because they were afraid of the virus, but the other half because that first year in 2021, if we wanted to do the event in city facilities, we had to check vaccination at the door.
Right.
And that really caused a lot of consternation.
Yeah, hard, yeah. Well, it's past that now. It's all yes. happening starting this upcoming Friday, next Friday. Starts at noon on Friday the 24th. Goes to 7 p.m. that first day, and then it's 10 to 5 on Saturday and Sunday. Admission to Centennial Hall is $10 per person, and if you're under 12, you're admitted free, and then there's no admission charge if you're just going to go to the Jack. And it's the Juno Public Market. It's been happening for 41 years, but 41st public market.
Yes.
Right. Yes.
Right. I just want to mention, don't let parking stop you, because we have a whole parking lot across the Eagan Expressway, courtesy of Duff Mitchell. And then, the public safety building was removed, and there's lots of parking.
Lots of parking, yeah. I don't think anyone's going to let parking stop them.
No,
it's going to happen. It's the public market,
right.
and it happens every year. It's a Juno tradition. Peter and Fubao, thanks so much for coming in and talking to us,
Andy.
About it.
Thank you.
And may I ask you something? Will there be a trolley or no?
No trolley this year. I called, but it wasn't in service.
Okay, no trolley, but don't let that stop you.
No.
Right? All right, it's the public market. Thanks to both.
Come on down.
Come on down. Listen to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO. I'm your host, Andy Klein. And coming up next, Cabaret, Theater in the Rough. We have, that's an exciting thing to be taking on. Katie Jensen is here, co-artistic director of Theater in the Rough. And Kelsey Riker's here, who's an actor and performer, the MC of Cabaret. I almost think it's typecasting.
You're not what I mean? Wrong. You're not wrong.
I mean, you are the MC of Juno.
Yep. I'm honored.
And Tai Yamoka is an actor who's playing Cliff Bradshaw in Cabaret. And Katie, thanks so much for coming in. Tell me a little bit about the inspiration behind picking this Cabaret. Of all the things you might pick, why Cabaret?
Out of all the things that I could pick to take on a musical, well, I picked it. Is because of the whole theme of this season is about the forgotten ones, the invisible ones, those that are oppressed, and the dehumanization that's happening in our culture now. And Cabaret, because when I was a kid and watching, the 1962 movie, you think about the Nazis coming to power and it's like, oh, that could never happen again. And we are now in a time where the hate and the division is so intense that we are on a knife's edge where it can happen again.
And you picked the 1998 version of Cabaret. Tell me a little bit about the difference in what most people, I'm sure, have seen, the Liza Minnelli and Joel Grey and, you know, that fantastic movie. But tell me about the difference.
The 98 version is when they went back and they revisited it, and they brought in much more of the elements of Isherwood's book, Goodbye to Berlin. So it's much grittier and it's closer to the bone, so to speak, about taking on those issues that are not just the oppression and dehumanization of the Jewish people, but also of the queer culture and also of the Romas, all of those that did not agree with the Nazi superhuman ideal.
Yeah, right.
I see that happening now. There is such division. There are so many attacks that we couldn't even imagine, like Nazis parading. And the thing that tipped it is up in the neighborhood where I lived, there was a kind of a truck parade. And the truck parade, you know, you'll see them with the Confederate flags, but I saw them with Nazi flags. And at that moment, I said, we must do this. We must call attention to the fact that it's happening.
Right here, right in our backyard.
Right now, right here. And it is to all cultures that are that don't fit in with the mythical American dream.
Kelsey, tell me a little bit about your role as the MC. It's sort of – it truly – it's an interesting role because it truly is like the MC of the play itself, but also you're the MC within the play, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So – and the way Katie went about shaping this particular production is that everything that you see on stage as the audience is coming out of the MC's memory and out of the MC's mind. So this is all coming from right up here. So I am kind of this ever-present being up there because this... I get to be a focal point is not the right word, but a lens through which we are seeing all of the action on stage. So
you're sort of the writer's voice in a way.
Yeah, a little bit. So I kind of get to be there watching along with everyone the entire time and experiencing all of the different stories that happen.
Are you physically on stage the entire time?
Not the entire time, but I make myself present a lot of the time.
You're
yeah.
sort of there as the, yeah. you know, we're seeing it through your eyes. And so we're sort of seeing your landscape that
right.
you create kind of. Yeah,
exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, Ty, tell me a little bit about Cliff Bradshaw. Your character. I like that name.
Oh, me too. he's the male love interest of the show. It kind of follows his path of coming to Berlin and finding the Kit Kat Club and falling in love with Berlin and then also being terrified by it at some point. He's a somewhat closeted queer man, you know, in Berlin, which is at the time was very open and free, and him finding himself in that and falling in love with Sally Bowles just witnessing what was happening in Berlin and Germany in early 1930s and trying to come to terms with that and eventually escaping back to America to safety.
Yeah. What do you think are some of the, you know, what are some of the themes and lessons that you're hoping people draw from this that, you know, are relevant today?
I think that what it is that I'm hoping is that it incites and it demands some discourse that doesn't make people subhuman. It's hard as hell, but my concern about what's happening now, and as I witnessed it, dehumanization is a very slippery and dangerous process. And we're seeing it now in our country and in our community right now. And when we diminish others who are different from us, or if we need a target to offload our anger, rage, and fear, well, we're in this time now. And, you know, so slowly over time, we use words and images that dehumanize other people and slowly move into what is called moral exclusion. And so people that are different are no longer protected by basic human rights. And we see the process of this dehumanization at the core of every genocide in history. So what I hope that people take away from this is to see this journey of being open and free, which is what was happening in the Weimar Republic, and that's why people were so drawn to Berlin at the time, and then how quickly it closed and how they didn't see it coming. And there are those in the play that choose to look away, just like there are those of us that choose to look away. And what I'm hoping is to look at it, see it, and avoid making the same mistake again.
It's an amazing piece of work when you think about – when I think about Cabaret, I kind of think about like joyousness and like the fun of the show and
well,
like all that
yeah.
stuff. But then – You know, you,
that.
Obviously that play is not, you know, you know, in the end joyous, right? I mean, there's definitely something real, you know, it's got a very dark theme happening throughout.
Yeah, it shows that but, arc, and there's just,
yeah.
there's beautiful dance and
right.
music and a very talented band and choreographer and cast. So it is just watching this very openness at the beginning and joy and it, where that journey goes.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about the details. When's it starting? How can people go see this? It looks like it's opening tonight.
Yep.
Okay. Mm. Jeez, what are you guys doing here? You need to be getting makeup on.
Oh, that's not a lie.
But no, it starts tonight. And go ahead and tell me what the run is. Yeah.
It opens tonight and it runs until December 10th. And tickets available are available at our website, theaterintherough.org, or via the Jack, or also tickets are available at the door.
It's in beautiful McPheeters Hall, which is such a mm-hmm. wonderful space to watch plays and be part of the audience and kind of be almost so intimate in there, mm-hmm. but at the same time, so wonderful as far as acoustics and things like that go.
And it'll be very intimate with a band, with the,
yeah.
the six seven-person
band
we've
wow,
got.
Live orchestra.
Yeah.
Very cool. That's really cool. Okay, well, so it's Cabaret. It's this kind of different version. If you've seen the movie, don't think you've seen it all before because this is a newer version, a 1998 version. And it's, as you were saying, a little bit grittier, digs a little bit more into the actual novel that called Goodbye to Berlin and a different take on Cabaret starting tonight and running through the 10th. It's all at McPheeters Hall, and you can get more information and tickets at theaterintherough.org. Katie, Kelsey, and Ty, thanks for coming in and break a leg. Have a great show tonight.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And a great run.
Thank you.
All
thank
right.
you. Thank you.
Welcome back to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO. I'm your host, Andy Klein, and it is Diabetes Awareness Month. And Bartlett is, of course, as our region, as our hospital here in town, is heading up awareness about that. And Cynthia Gordon, a nurse at Bartlett Hospital. And also, you are also the...
I'm a diabetes care and education specialist.
I let her take that title, but so tell me about that. Like diabetes as a specific area of study and a specific area of work. What goes into all of that? What's the kind of world of diabetes that...
Well, my world is to learn everything I can about diabetes and then share it with the people who have diabetes or those who are at risk, and I help them prevent it. So right now, about 11.6% of all Americans have diabetes.
I was just going to ask that question. It seems like it is such a prevalent disease.
It is. It's epidemic, and it's not looking good. By the year 2050, 1 in 3 Americans are expected to have diabetes.
Now, is some of that preventable? Is a large part of that preventable?
I'd say a fair amount is preventable. So most people who develop type 2 diabetes, which is the most prevalent kind of diabetes, often get something called prediabetes before they develop type 2. And what's really exciting about prediabetes, and yes, I'm talking nerd here, is that if we find someone who has prediabetes, meaning their blood sugars are elevated but not yet high enough to get the diagnosis of type 2, we can actually work with them to reverse it and make it go away and help them prevent diabetes, which I'm all over that.
Is that, I'm just going to guess diet and exercise related mostly, or are there other things as well?
It's diet, exercise, and actually just a little bit of weight loss can actually help improve blood sugars.
So there's a direct correlation between weight gain and diabetes?
There is. So there are lots of risk factors for diabetes. If you're a woman who had gestational diabetes during pregnancy, that puts you at higher risk. If you have a first degree relative, like a parent or a sibling who had diabetes, your risk is higher. If you're over the age of 45, your risk gets higher. So there are many different things that can put you at higher risk for diabetes.
Well, I'm over the age of 45. So tell me, what should I be thinking about? I've never had an indication that I have diabetes, and I don't have first degree, so fortunately I don't have that. But what things should I be thinking about to make sure that I'm staying in a good zone when it comes to diabetes?
Well, the first thing I'd say is it's very important to always have a blood glucose test done at least once a year. And usually, for the most part, when we go see our doctors or our nurse practitioners, our PAs, and we get lab work done, glucose is included in that test. So it's always important to know what that is. If you're someone that doesn't have a primary care, we partner with the Alaska Health Fair. We have 2 health fairs a year and low-cost lab. We also have at Bartlett the free glucose and cholesterol screening. So there are other ways to find out. So that's primary. Is one, get a lab test done.
Just know where you are.
Exactly. And if you're not sure, ask your provider. The other things that are really important is one, to know about healthy eating, healthy portion sizes, and kind of what foods do to your blood sugars. I think that's really important to know that. Also, it's super important to get exercise. The current recommendation is 150 minutes per week. And even if you just get, if you're having a crazy day, if you get just like 15 minutes worth of exercise, that's a great payoff.
I mean, people always talk about the magic 10,000 steps, right?
Yes.
And that seems like a great goal, but not always realistic every single day for people.
You're right. And so if you are having one of those busy days, do what you can. It does pay off. And actually, they show like even 5 to 10 minutes of high intensity workout can make a huge difference in your health.
And in getting that level down.
Yes.
That glucose level down. Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Also, just in general, getting exercise, eating healthy, knowing what your blood sugars are, and being a healthy weight can all help.
Is Alaska on the good side or bad side when it comes to statistics on diabetes?
Well, the ethnic group that has the highest rates of diabetes are Alaska Natives and American Indians, and they're always kind of grouped together. So we do have some pretty high rates of new diagnoses, unfortunately. Juneau, though, typically has been lower than other parts of the state. I can't tell you why.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, what? Just we're all active here.
Well, I'd like maybe, to think so. Yeah. I'd like to think so.
Yeah. Are there? And I mean, are there? It's great to think about. Like, so, exercise, diet. Are there other things that maybe people wouldn't normally associate with diabetes that would improve?
Yeah, not smoking.
Oh,
a new study just came out that said if you quit smoking, you can reduce your risk of diabetes, type 2 diabetes, by 30 to 40%.
That's incredible.
So they also think
reason to try to keep from smoking and try to stop smoking.
It is a
tough thing for people. You know, I always think that it's like, you know, well, here's another health professional telling me to stop smoking. You know what I mean? And it's just hard. But boy, it's such a tough thing to kick. You know what I mean? I'm guessing Bartlett has resources for people who want to try to quit smoking.
Yeah, the state actually does too. They have a quit line. And so, yeah, just, you know, smoking, I've never heard of anything that smoking makes better.
No, that's right.
Besides maybe your stress temporarily.
Oh, yeah, for 5 minutes.
Yeah, right. But, you know, even they think air pollution plays a role in developing type 2 diabetes. So there are many different things. We know that there are medications that can raise blood sugars too. So there's a lot of different things that can cause elevated blood sugars.
Yeah. Well, so tell me just one more thing about diabetes, this awareness month. Mm-hmm. What's the big focus that you're trying to get across to people for the awareness month?
Well, the big thing I'm trying to get across is mainly just to know your numbers, know your labs. And if you're not sure about your labs, you know, never be afraid to ask your medical provider. You know, I really do believe that knowledge is power.
Yeah, maybe it's just never come up quite or for some reason and you don't have that knowledge. Yeah.
And a lot of people are just absolutely stunned to find out they have diabetes. Now, the thing, though, about diabetes is it's pretty sneaky. You know, people can be symptom-free with diabetes for as long as 7 years before they develop some of the weird symptoms like going to the bathroom a lot, being thirsty, being tired, blurry vision, unexplained weight loss. So it's pretty sneaky.
Yeah. And not to get too much on the scary side, but what are some of the reasons why you want to avoid diabetes? How does it affect your life?
Well, it costs the average person who has diabetes an extra $12,000 a year in medical costs.
Gosh.
So that's one reason.
Yeah. Just money, right?
Yeah. But the other thing, so people who have uncontrolled diabetes can experience some really rotten things in life like heart attack, stroke, blindness, kidney failure, amputation, and that's just the short list.
Yeah.
So the way I think about diabetes is it's really important that if you're someone who has diabetes, you have to tell diabetes how to behave and what you're going to do to control it. Otherwise, it's going to control you.
Oh, interesting. So you just have to take the wheel as much as possible and control the factors that either can put you into that realm of having diabetes or if you do have it, kind of controlling the symptoms.
Absolutely.
Yeah, right.
And diabetes is a self-managed condition. You know, you come see your physician every once in a while. You might see me, a registered dietitian, a pharmacist, but we expect you to take control of it. Mm-hmm. It's your condition. You know, I feel like I'm kind of in the back seat with a map. People with diabetes are the driver of the car. I'm sitting in the back seat with roadmap saying, maybe we should turn left here and do something different.
Well, any other place to go for people to get more information about Diabetes Awareness Month?
Absolutely. There are several places. The American Diabetes Association, diabetes.org, has free information. Center for Disease Control. And I have a website at Bartlett Regional Hospital about diabetes.
So go to Bartlett Regional Hospital and just search for diabetes or click on where it says diabetes and you'll find probably information about the services you can provide and contacts for you and contacts for people at Bartlett that can help.
All right. And I'm happy to answer questions.
Great. Well, Cynthia Gordon from Bartlett Regional Hospital. It's Bartlett Diabetes Month and a Diabetes Awareness Month. And for more information, you can go to Bartlett's BartlettHospital.org and get more information on diabetes. Cynthia, thanks so much for coming in and talking to us about this.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Welcome back. You're listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO. I'm your host, Andy Klein. And Alaska Positive is a program that's been going on for...
Since 1970.
Since 1970. It's amazing. Jackie Manning is here from the Alaska Museum, and Camille Seaman is here, who is one of the jurors, and she's a photographer, internationally renowned, beautiful work on especially Arctic regions and Antarctic regions. Welcome to Juno.
Thank you.
Have you been here before?
I have.
Okay.
Not that long ago, this summer in August.
And has that been because of some of the work you do to go up and see either glaciers or that kind of thing? Or,
yes, yeah. I was asked to lead a trip here on the Inner Passage. Inside Passage.
Inside Passage, yeah. Wow, that's great. Well, welcome back. And you have a talk tonight that's a part of the fall-winter speaker series, Cooler Seasons, Warming World. So let's talk first about that theme, Jackie, if you could just tell us a little bit about the State Museum taking that on as a theme.
You know, well, I found out, I haven't even shared this with Camille, that Camille was a Denali artist in residence back in, I believe, was it 2015? And David Rosenthal was a Denali artist in residence back in 2015. And both of their work deals with these Antarctica and Arctic, and they talk about the effects of climate change, and that's shown through their work. Anyways, it just started to come together as an opportunity to embrace this theme this winter. And so we put together a lecture series.
Yeah, very cool. So tell me about, first of all, just tell me a little bit about your work and what made you fascinated with doing this type of work.
That's a great story. If you want to know how someone from New York ends up working in the Arctic and Antarctic,
right,
you definitely need to come.
Okay.
Listen to the story, because
we don't want to steal the thunder of the actual lecture.
Yeah, it's a remarkable story. It's not one that I could have ever dreamed possible for myself, but it's been an amazing journey. I feel so privileged to be able to see these incredible parts of our planet. And
what is it about that as a photographic subject that really draws you in?
Well, it's the fact that it feels like something out of a science fiction movie. These places feel otherworldly, and yet, you know, this is your planet. And so to be able to experience that on our own planet, this very foreign alien world, these very inhospitable places, and see the beauty of that, the light, the creatures that endure and survive there is really profound.
Yeah, yeah. And tell me a little bit about the changes that you've witnessed through your career photographing.
Yes, you know, so this year marks the 20th anniversary of my travels to a place called Svalbard. I began actually in Alaska in 1999, up in Kotzebue. That was my first Arctic experience, walking across the sea ice. And so I've been doing this for now 20 plus years to the Arctic and Antarctic. And I am shocked that I'm actually able to see this isn't 50 or 100 years. This is just 20 years, sometimes just 10 years. And I'm seeing really remarkable changes, very, very troubling. And so, you know, I don't think that fear is helpful. And I think that beauty is very powerful and can really be moving. And that's what I try to do with my images. Through beauty, I help people to feel more connected with our entire planet and feel the fact that this is ours. This is our legacy. This is our heritage.
What do you think it is about? I saw that you in the write-up on your talk tonight, it talked a little bit about the value you think that art has in communicating to people. What is it about people seeing something that's presented as art and in an artistic way that?
Well, for many people, you know, numbers are very hard to visualize. Data, tons of data is very hard to understand what that means. And yet in one photograph, all of that data, all those numbers can be felt in a very emotional way. And I think that that's where art is really important. I don't think we will solve our climate crisis issues without art. And not just photography, I mean all kinds of art. It's going to take everything, but writing, music, film, it really, art is the way there.
That's really a fascinating way to think about it. And I've never heard anyone articulate it that way, you know, but it's, what you're saying, of course, is so true. How are people going to feel something? How are people going to feel that they're going to have a call to arms and a call to action?
Exactly.
It's not going to necessarily be because they saw a pie chart.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
I talking to David Rosenthal a couple of weeks ago during his opening, the one thing that he said was what he's observed is things can sort of look very similar for a long time, and then it just things get to a tipping point, and then all of a sudden they can change in
right.
just a few years.
That's what I've seen in the last 3 years in the Arctic and Antarctic.
Just the last 3 years.
Just like what you said, where it felt like, oh, maybe it's not so bad. And then, whoa, am I had to pull out photos from just 10 years ago and side by side and go, whoa.
Now, was that in sea ice or icebergs?
These are glaciers,
or glaciers?
Particularly. The glaciers are looking so unhealthy, so deflated, so crevassed. Many people, the truth is, calving of glaciers is normal. But what isn't happening that should be happening is the refilling of those snow basins that feed the glacier. And so we're not getting the refill. Mm-hmm. We're just, you know, depleting the ice and not getting that refill. And the long-term implications of that are going to affect fresh water supplies for billions of people on our planet. And so we might think, well, you know, it's just ice, whatever. But it really will start to have a profound effect on each one of us individually.
Yeah. Wow. Jackie, tell me a little bit about just some of the details if people want to see this lecture tonight, and also a little bit more about this juried art exhibit.
Yes. So tonight, Camille's going to give a talk about her work at 5:30 at the Alaska State Museum, and it's also going to be available to watch on Zoom, and we've got that link up on the museum's website. And, of course, KTOO is going to be recording as well for being able to see that later.
Oh, that's
online.
Cool. I didn't know that. Oh, that's
yes.
great. Okay, cool.
So very appreciative of that. And the exhibit, Alaska Positive, so we had a call that opened up back in September, October for photographers from all over the state to submit work to be juried. By every couple of years, we select a different juror, and this time it's Camille. And so it's a two-part jury process. So she did the initial review online, a digital review. And then we ask, after that initial review, she trims it down to a certain amount. And then we ask those photographers to send their prints in so she can actually look at the print process and see how it looks in person and then make a final selection from that.
And Camille, yeah. So what do you look for? And that's probably an unfair question,
you
right?
Know,
but what is it that you're trying to determine or look at there?
Something I try and tell any aspiring photographer is you don't need to make a photo like I do. We have me already doing that. And I don't want to see you redo a photo that you've seen. I want to see the world the way you uniquely see it. That is where the value is. And so what I'm looking for is something I haven't seen. You know, maybe it's something we know, but show me in a way I have not thought of before. And so that's really what I'm looking for, is your unique perspective. I think that's where the value is.
Yeah, that's really cool. Anything else, Jackie?
Alaska Positive will open on December 1st.
Okay.
And that will be up at the museum through March March 9th, and then it will travel throughout the state and go to different institutions for the next couple of years.
Right. And David's photographs are in the adjoining room, right?
So, yes. Yeah. So you will see his exhibit, his paintings. He's a painter.
I'm sorry, not
his paintings. And then Alaska Positive will be in the next gallery. Yeah. So two amazing shows this winter
at the
State Museum.
Well, great to meet you, Camille. Thanks for coming back to Juneau. Appreciative
yes, thank you very
of
much.
That. And Jackie, always great to see you. Again, it's Alaska Positive. It's part of the state of the Alaska State Museum's Fall and Winter Speaker Series, Cooler Seasons, Warming World. It's a lecture with Camille Seaman, who we've just been talking to. It's happening tonight at 5:30, and it's at the Alaska State Museum. It's also on Zoom, and you can get that Zoom link. If you can't make it down to the museum, you can get that Zoom link on the Alaska State Museum website, and it's also going to be recorded, so it'll be there for future people to see. But go see it tonight. It's going to be exciting.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah, right.
I'm here.
You're here. You're here, and she's a wonderful person to meet. I recommend it highly. Camille Seaman, thank you so much for coming in, and
thank
Jackie,
you.
Great to see you again. Thanks so much. And have a great talk tonight as part of the Alaska Positive series. Thanks so much to both of you.
Thank you, Andy.
Welcome back to Juneau Afternoon from KTOO. I'm Andy Klein, your host for today. Well, as you just heard, the Peanuts Christmas music was on. Christmas is right around the corner, which means Christmas trees. You've got to start thinking about your Christmas tree. What better place to do it than in the parking lot at Fred Meyer? You know that the swim and dive team are going to be having the best Christmas trees in town. And we've got two folks from the two team captains, right? Mm-hmm. So Emily, team captain.
Yes.
Of swim, dive, or both, or what?
Swimming.
And then Samantha, you're also team captain. No, is that dive or is that swimming?
Swimming.
Okay.
We don't have a dive team.
There's no dive team this year at all. So why am I saying dive team? It was on a flyer I saw.
The TM has dive.
Oh, I see. TM has dive. JDHS has this. You're the swim team from JDHS. Well, great to have you in the studio. Thanks for coming in. And were you guys part of this last year?
Mm-hmm.
Was it just like the craziest weekend going, or, you know, seems like it's just jam packed. People are coming to get Christmas trees like they're going out of style.
Yeah, they definitely go quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about the process of getting the Christmas trees. Where do they come from? Do you know?
I'm not sure. I know they get shipped up, but I don't know from where.
Maybe Washington State or something. It looks like you got Douglas firs, Nordman firs, mm-hmm. Noble firs, and then also wreaths.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's amazing. So do you know is there like a definite difference? Can you tell the difference of the different trees? Are they kind of all you can?
I feel like you can kind of see in like the branches, and then I feel like they smell different too.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, the Christmas tree smell.
Yes, they smell very good.
Right. So tell me a little bit about the details. When's it starting and that kind of stuff?
So our opening date is November 24th, which is
next Friday.
Next Friday. And so we'll be running it Monday through Friday, 5 to 7 p.m. And then on weekends, it's 10 a.m. to 5 p.m.
From past years, how long do they last?
They go pretty quick.
Go quick, as I remember. I think I didn't jump on it quick enough one year and they were gone.
Yeah, online people like ordering online and then coming and picking up and people just going in person, it goes really quickly.
And then this is all, of course, a fundraiser for the swim team, right? Mm-hmm. So what do you guys do with the funds?
All the funds go to our travel costs. So when we travel to different Southeast places for our meets, yeah. That's what all the funds cover.
Catching the ferry, right?
We fly.
You fly?
Yeah.
All right. So, how many people are on the swim team?
Our team is about 21 people, 22.
TM is much bigger.
Yes.
Wow. That's a lot of people to fly.
Yes. Yeah.
Especially like the smaller communities around, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow. And what's your season? Like what time of year are you? What's the season for the meets?
Yeah. So our first practice is the first week of August. And then our state meet is the first weekend in November. And then we'll have, I think our first meet's around the middle of September. And then we go like every other weekend we'll have a meet.
Are you still in the season now?
No.
Or is it over?
It's over.
Yeah. How'd you do?
Our girls team won state.
How did I not know that? I'm sorry. Apologize for not knowing that. That's awesome.
Yeah, it was super exciting.
Wow, I'll bet it was.
Yeah.
Were the meets up in Anchorage?
The meet was actually here in Juneau.
Oh, it was. Okay, yeah. Very cool.
It's been like only the third time having it here.
Do you feel like there was a home pool advantage a little bit?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Kind of knew where, you know. Yeah, right.
Yeah. We've been practicing there all season long. So.
Did people like get personal bests and things like that at the meet? And, yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. So.
That's so cool. Congratulations. That's
really fun. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That's really awesome. Well, so the Christmas tree thing, then do you know about how much funds you guys typically get as part of this?
I'm not sure if there's a
total dollar amount.
It definitely covers the majority of our travel.
Yeah, that's great. So this is like the big fundraiser that you guys do as part of this. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you were saying, tell me a little bit. I know I made a mistake about the dive team, but does Thunder Mountain have a dive team?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So we just didn't have any divers this year.
I see.
And they have quite a few. They have a pretty good dive team.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah. But this is just JDHS or is this combined?
So we sell them combined.
Right. Okay. But you know, let's just, you guys are with JDHS. So come on. I'm not going to talk about them. Rivals. Is there a little bit of a rivalry there?
Definitely.
Good. Yeah. That's good. I'm glad there is. That's fun. Well, congratulations on the state victory. That's so cool to hear. And once again, it's the Christmas trees happening starting next Friday. And that's it for KTOO's Juno Afternoon.